In the current times that we're facing, and probably throughout history, we've always had to talk about or at least address or acknowledge poverty. Some people say it's the fault of the poor. They didn't pull their bootstraps up or they weren't educated. And we live in a time where we can call the modernization that exists an elevated chance for everyone to make it, right? And so you've seen the introduction of artificial intelligence, or better known as AI. And with the current situation where we are, not to date ourselves, right? But we're dealing with a global pandemic, one on the level, maybe not of mortality, but on the level of concern of a pandemic 100 years ago. And so the question about the government's role in the protection of the people really matters. And the question about universal basic income comes up, or UBI. And so I thought, if you used artificial intelligence with universal basic income, could you address and fix the issues of poverty, or does poverty always exist? Because we have to have that classification system in our society. So I decided to talk to my local, so to speak, data scientist who works in AI and has a grasp on what artificial intelligence is doing and can do in the future, as well as an understanding about universal basic income and its scary comparisons to socialism. So with all that being said, in a long intro, I asked Colin Perrin to help me today with this conversation about, could we take artificial intelligence while implementing universal basic income and help the globe in general? And if we helped the globe in general, could we eliminate poverty? Well, you have to listen to the conversation to know what we came up with. And so with that, let's go. All right, and we're back for part two. Let's go. So right now, and the thing that comes to my mind, and this is sort of a, I don't think it's racial, but it may be. I don't know. I just think it's class. I think class is a bigger issue in the United States than race. It's just, race is put in front because it helps people ignore the class thing. But so, for instance, there's Section 8 housing, right? So there's affordable housing. And if you had a universal basic income that paid for housing for people, I think that realtors and builders, I don't know if builders would be opposed to it, but realtors might be opposed to it because it would have an effect on the housing market. You think?
Yes. If the realtors were really just focused on scraping the bottom of the barrel, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it'll always impact, you know, a certain segment of any industry, right? But it doesn't, you know, again, that's kind of a vast industry when you say real estate, right? I can sell a $50,000 house. I can sell a $1 million house, right? That's such a wide range to begin with. So,
right.
Yes. Will it eliminate the need for those realtors that are trying to sell the $50,000 or the $10,000 house, right? No, you don't even know if that sort of thing exists, will that eliminate that and will make it harder for those realtors? Sure, yeah, absolutely. But it just means that they shift.
Right, and so, because I think about it, and this is why I thought businesses would be better, because if the businesses are the ones who are buying the homes and the real estate, the houses, you know, the single unit homes or whatever, then I think it changes, because you're selling to sort of a different demographic. You're doing sort of that corporate sales.
I mean, here's where I may disagree with that one, because we've already seen that happen before, right? Some businesses, I don't remember when, maybe it was the 1920s or maybe in that range, right? Where there were capitalists that would set up these the housing, right? Like in the middle of nowhere, and they underpaid you, right? They put you into debt, and then, you know, you had credits to use at the general store, right? That happened to be in this little community.
Right.
And so that's actually kind of, debt slavery is still slavery. Think that, you know, who knows, maybe in the future that may not be the case. Businesses might not want to leverage that history, but that's happened before in history as well. So I don't know maybe if businesses are necessarily the right avenue all the time, because, you know, you have varying kinds of businesses and varying kinds of business ethics. do you want, you know, is that something that we want to do, or do we want to pool resources as a community and pool thought and pool influence as a community such that, you know, our community, our country, our whatever has the capability to end a specific thing, end poverty, right?
Right.
End homelessness.
Now, go ahead, finish.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, as being part, as living in, you know, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, I am skeptical when people say you can't do that. Well, I mean, if you can't do that, why did some of these other countries do it that aren't as wealthy as us?
Right. And I think it's the pool of resources of thoughts. And that, the only reason I said businesses is because I know people who've lived in Section 8 housing, and it's normally like run down, and there's the thought that people don't appreciate it, but it's the stigma because it's attached to your income. And I think that is an issue.
Right.
And so for instance, I visited China a few years ago, and I remember our tour guide said he just bought a house, right? Or he bought a condo. And so I asked him, so like, how did that work? And I don't know if it still exists in that way today, but he said, well, what it happens is the government buys half of the house and you buy the other half of the house, and then you can buy them out. Well, I don't know if you can buy them out because it's China, but I think you can buy to own your whole half on your own. So you can buy the other 50% of ownership in it, which is intriguing in the sense because it encourages people to, one, know that housing is affordable, but also it encourages them to want to buy. But I think being able to buy that other 50% probably matters sort of in a free market.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And again, there are hybrids, right? China is one of them. It's got capitalism and you know, communism basically combined. So I think the new world just has hybrids. It's, you know, countries borrow from different ideologies, and, you know, depending on the balance that you want as a nation, that's kind of what's going on. So I know I keep harping back at this scenario. If people stop thinking in binaries and start thinking in hybrids, then maybe that's a way to get to a real solution.
I think George Lucas was on something with Star Wars where it is sort of the Jedi and Sith. And then all of a sudden, as Star Wars evolved, there's gray Jedi, right? So you can, and I think everybody should be a gray Jedi, or I don't know if a gray Sith is a good thing. I think a gray Jedi is a mix of both. But anyways, because of homelessness is attributed to so many different things. And so if we're providing housing for everyone, and it's attached in some way to employment, can we have 100% employment? Because I don't know if that's possible. Is that possible?
No, I don't think it's possible because there are some people who just can't work, right? For a lot of reasons, you know. But I think what can help, right, is a dividend paying system. If this dividend paying system wasn't attached to anything, right, other than the fact that you are a taxpayer or an investor in this great nation or in a, you know, in a specific thing, then I think that could be the solution. And again, this isn't my independent thought here. I mean, there have been a lot of people that have mentioned some sort of freedom dividend, right? So it's not anything new. Republicans in Alaska have pulled something off
Yeah,
similarly,
for years.
yeah, for years, right? So again, and I think maybe this goes back to AI, right? Like we don't have to, with AI, it doesn't have to reach out into some magical force. It just looks back at what's been done, right? And that's what that is also similarly to kind of my thought process. Like what have we tried? What kind of experiment have we tested? And we simply expand on that. Try it again. Does it repeat? Why didn't it repeat? Right? That's really simple.
And so for me, I think the question that would be asked is that because, like, for instance, Andrew Yang had the Freedom Dividend. I think it was $2,000 a month or something like that. And while I got the premise when I did the research on it, that $2,000 a month came from tax income, and but then it would eliminate other programs. And then and the belief is that, well, if you put that money in the hands of people, it'll work better than giving them Social Security or making them ready for Medicare, which I'm inclined to disagree with, because humans in this state don't really prepare for the future. So I feel like there has to be some certain social networks that the individual doesn't touch, so they can sort of take care of themselves, right? But how would a dividend sort of a dividend paying system be financed, and like how would a person invest in that?
Well, I mean, that's, I think, by investing in the economy, as simple as that, right?
Okay.
When you, how the economy is healthy is when people continue to move money through it. It's a fluid thing, right? When people buy, businesses get paid, businesses can pay taxes, and so forth, right? And you know the tax loop, and then taxes maybe get paid out to the people, and people buy, and so forth and so forth. I think that that loop is absolutely important. When people freak out because of a pandemic or some sort of a housing crash, usually people stop spending, and that actually makes things worse, right? Because there's no economic flow.
Right.
So, yeah, so I do think that, you know, let's cut out the complexities of it all and just say, okay, let's spend on our people. And yes, that means, yeah, in Andrew Yang's case, it's whatever, was it 1200 or
I
$2,000 a
think it was
month?
2,000. I think it was
Right,
no,
exactly.
I think it was 1200, and then he increased it to 2,000 when the pandemic started.
Right, yeah, okay. So, I mean, even with that, right? So let's say you got that, Lou, right? And but instead of the government, that came from, you know, some sort of stock paying dividend, right?
Makes sense. Okay.
Would you stop working?
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, okay,
I wouldn't
yeah,
want
right.
that company to keep making money.
Yes, exactly. So you want to spend, keep spending in the American economy, right? Like you want to spend at your local store. You want to walk over to the grocery store and spend it there, right? To
Now,
keep the economic flow going.
Does that, but, and so it goes kind of to a question that just made me think. So what about the small business that doesn't have, isn't sort of publicly traded? Like, is it just based in the stock market where
no,
then the
but,
actual
I mean,
stock market
no,
numbers
and
would matter?
I guess maybe I didn't really answer your question, right? So I do believe that the government has a way for us to pool our tax money and tell the government to say, spend it back on us, rather than just saying, well, you're going to spend it on interest groups, you're going to spend it on this. It's confusing. Whereas if you just say, hey, all right, look, we pay you money to pool stuff together because the economy is booming. It may not be booming everywhere in the United States, but it's booming somewhere, right? And therefore, as long as you pay us back, then, you know, we can be sure that we'll probably spend it.
Right. I
on rents, which is probably a local landlord, right?
Right.
Small business. The corner store, right? Which is probably a small business, right?
Right.
So, you know, if we can, I know this sounds cliche, but if you can think globally but act locally, right?
Right.
We think globally by pooling our resources, but we act locally by spending it on local business, right?
And so with that, does AI kind of take away from that? Because you're not saying a consumption tax, basically a consumption tax would be one of the primary feeders, right?
Yeah, it could be. And the reason why I say that, you know, it's a good idea to tie it to artificial intelligence and automation is it's already happening anyway.
Right.
I mean, like, businesses are going to save money because they get to automate something that didn't used to be automated, right? So at some point in time, there's got to be some tipping point where it says, okay, look, we've automated so much away. We're distributing almost all of the wealth to just a singular company.
Right.
Right?
Like, which is basically now anyways.
Right, exactly. It's basically now anyways. So I don't think that it's that vastly odd to say, hey, there's a growing industry. Well, we want that industry to grow here in the United States, and we want to invest in local AI, right? Instead of international artificial intelligence or international automation. And we want that artificial intelligence and that investment in our AI basically to come back and pay us back, because we are saying we're gonna spend on the company that exists here in the US.
That makes sense. So, and I was thinking, because one of the things that I think about is the deficits and the debt that the US government has. And people are like, well, who do we owe the money? The government owes the citizens money. The citizens are unaware of that, but they owe the citizenry money mostly. I mean, they owe other countries money as well. But most of that debt and that deficit is owed to the citizens of the nation. And they're unaware of that, right? And so they are actually owed money by the government. And so my thing is so to finance that, now I don't know if this is the answer, but I see, you see the rise and you're seeing large businesses starting to invest in it, but crypto, what role could crypto possibly play in a dividend? Because I feel like maybe if the dividend was placed in crypto, then it sort of gives people a blank slate in a sense. And again, it's just, I haven't fleshed it fully out, but I feel like it may be something.
That's a whole nother topic of conversation. But definitely, like, I mean, there's a possibility. That said, crypto is less developed still as a technology compared to AI, right? You have to look at the technology evolution curve that exists. And crypto is still somewhat behind it. It has promised certain things, but it hasn't delivered yet. Whereas AI is already delivering, right? So I think that yes, crypto may have an opportunity to do that in the future. But I'd say that let's probably tie it to something now that's growing now, right? That has the potential to disrupt very quickly.
Right. And so I did some research and I was looking at places that have used a universal basic income. And the thing that I've noticed, and one of the things that is huge for me, I'm a big term limits guy. And what I've noticed is that in all the places where they have tried universal basic income, the governments are the ones who stop it early. It's always like some legislator who's like, oh, we need to stop this because it was a Project 8 in Uganda. Finland did it for 2 years, and Ontario, Canada did it. Nairobi did it, and obviously Alaska. And then they've had the Alaska Permanent Fund since 1982, right? And there have been economists who've talked about the negative income tax, where if you don't make X dollars, then you don't pay any taxes at all. And all of that I get. But the only reason I put crypto out there is to say, okay, well, if we're dealing in the dollar or whatever the local currency is, maybe we instead of giving people a do dollars, you give them crypto to pay for specific, I guess the basic income things, and then everything else can be done in dollars, and you can do an exchange. So that's the only reason I sort of added crypto in there. But what I've seen is that it's politicians who have stopped. Who have stopped the actual full implementation of a universal basic income. And I don't want to accuse them, but I don't know why.
Right, yeah, exactly. I have no idea, right? And so I think that that's one of the things that we have to ask our leaders and our politicians, like why would you stop something like this?
And so for me, I think the other thing is that people miss is that the government, the federal government, is a nonprofit organization. And so this thing, because I was a school teacher, and I remember my principal, she's pretty candid with a lot of things that I worked with her on. She's like, this is my budget. And she would come in under budget every year. So at the end of the year, she's like, I have a ton of money and I have to spend it because they won't let me keep it. And they'll actually give me less money next year because I was efficient with my money. And this is again where the government and rules cause it causes problems. So how do you sort of
Well,
get around
so I
something like
mean,
that?
and that's the reason why, right? We figured out that the government is really good at spending stuff, spending money, right? It's terrible at saving money. So it's good at collecting money and spending it. Like they just spend it. So how about they just spend it on you?
Yeah, and I agree. And the thing that's interesting, we saw this debate recently where there were two trains of thought in Congress, where one was like, hey, give the people money directly. And another train of thought was give it to businesses, and then the businesses will whatever they do, right? And so for me, it's always been confusing because I just, if you give people money, they spend it, period.
Which is great. So that's the whole point, you know. If you give people money, you want them to spend it in our economy.
And so with that, dealing with the people who are poor, poverty, and homeless, how can we make a system, maybe using AI, maybe using universal basic income, to lift them out? And is it almost necessary to have poverty in countries because of just sort of the structure of humanity today?
Well, like the here's the reason why I think that a freedom dividend works, right? If you pay a homeless person money, can you trust that they will spend it on their local business, on their local something? Do you think that you? You think you can, if we can make a bet that like I give someone, $20, a homeless guy $20, do you think he's gonna spend it? He'll probably spend it somewhere near.
The thing
Is he
is
gonna
not,
spend it with an international global agency?
well, one, they will spend it on someone near, but the train of thought is that they will spend it on drugs, or they're spending on getting some artificial high or something that doesn't necessarily benefit them. Even though I would argue when drug users spend money with drug dealers, the drug dealers invest in the economy. Now, obviously, it's non-tax money, so it's hard to keep track of, but they do spend it.
Right. It still gets spent, is what I'm saying, right? And it's not spent in some sort of large global strategy, right? It's usually spent locally.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Now, we know whatever, you know, some billionaire, right? So this guy has a reputation for hoarding money, right? We know that. You give $20 to a billionaire. Do you know they're going to spend it?
No, you don't. You don't.
Oh, and how do you know they're going to spend it on something local?
They probably won't.
Okay. All right. So you know, I just want to have this kind of thought exercise to say, okay, if the goal is to have money flow back into small businesses, right? And people spend that money on small businesses. Doesn't it make sense to just give it to the people? No questions asked. You know that they're going to spend it.
I agree. And I think that the issue with that is the power struggle of control, where the wealthy person wants to feel control. I don't think all wealthy people, but I think there's the mentality of that.
Right. But the good thing is they're probably going to still be wealthy.
Yeah, they're always going to be wealthy. Well, that's the thing that I've never understood. Here's the thing that I've never understood, just a small deviation before we start to close up, is I've never understood when wealthy people steal money. Like, I get you want to be wealthy, and if you're already wealthy, but I've never understood it. Like the Bernie Madoffs and the rich people who stole money, you were rich already. Why did you feel the need to steal more money? You're not going to be able to spend that money. It's just so you can look at it and know you have it. Like, I've never understood that.
Let's bring this back down to addiction, right? You brought that up with maybe someone who's homeless. The assumption is that person must be addicted to something. Can we not use the same logic and say, well, they must be addicted to something such that they want the excitement of stealing money, even when they're wealthy.
Yeah. What? But to see, but the difference is that's
why do
hidden.
Wealthy people shoplift?
Right. It's hidden. It's an addiction. But that when wealthy people do it, it's hidden from the public, as opposed to when less wealthy people do it and it's public. Because if someone's on drugs, you normally see them. You normally see the homeless person. The wealthy person can hide themselves away. So I think it's also attached to a narrative.
Right. Exactly. It's attached to a narrative, but again, we can dependently rely on that addiction, or rely on the fact that someone's going to spend money. And so if we know that the government is good at spending money and it's good at collecting money, why don't they just spend it on us?
Well, that would mean we would have to have a true democracy, which we don't. And I think people could argue with me, and they would use semantics, and the nuts and bolts is we don't have that in the United States. It doesn't exist. And that's
so you're suggesting that the United States government does not already spend money and spend money crazily, right?
No,
like, they'll just spend money.
No, they do spend money, but I'm what I'm saying is that they don't trust the people, and they don't feel an obligation, I would say. I would almost say obligation. They don't feel any obligation or fidelity to the citizen, because the citizen doesn't have the same influence as an interest group or a large donor.
Yeah, the billionaire, right?
Yeah. They don't have it. And I'm not, I am fully opposed to people taking money from rich people. Don't take it from them. I'm not saying you should take their money, but I think there has to be an investigation of, hey, if these people are stealing money, we need to kind of like be aware of that, check that, and do something about it. And we can't be so indebted to that person that we let them get away with it.
What's strange, though, is a lot of my colleagues that are in AI know that we're automating away jobs, and we're generating a lot of wealth.
Right.
Yes, some for us, but in some cases for a singular company. Well, then why is the people protecting the people that are, you know, removing this, their income, and saying, hey, why don't you just tax our thing, right? Go ahead and tax our AI. I think the majority of us in the AI realm, in tech, right, are saying, hey, we're building this stuff and we're going to build it no matter what because we love building it, right? So why don't you just tax the thing that we're building?
Well, I would say it's because, one, the people who make the laws, the politicians, don't understand the technology. I think this is an opinion just of me. The technology has moved so fast in front of us that we don't know how to use it. Like, I think technology moves so quickly that the human capacity to understand and to use it correctly is so far behind that they hunker down into conservative, and I don't mean conservative like political ideology, but conservative ideals that help them do protectionist things.
Yeah. But I'm saying, but I think that, you know, the government has the capability of change.
Yes, I agree.
And therefore, I think that as voters, as investors in our community and investors in our government, right? And I'm using that language on purpose, right?
Right.
Because if you pay taxes, you're an investor in that government.
Yep.
Right? You're a shareholder of that government. And the way shareholders move a company is through their vote. Right?
Well, yeah, I agree.
Okay, yeah. So I think as shareholders to this government, then we have the capability to move it in the direction we want to. And yes, it means we have to convince our fellow shareholder to move the company or this nation.
And that's the crux of it right there. That's literally. So a quick question before we wrap up. How, and just sort of a I guess long sort of simple way of saying it. How does someone get into to AI? So for instance, I told you that there's a website called AI for Anyone, just so you can understand what AI is. What would you recommend for someone to like understand AI better?
Well, honestly, there are a lot of resources out there. That said, I am kind of working on my own YouTube channel called Big Data Bite Sized. And so if any one of your listeners are interested in that, if you're interested in that, maybe I can interview you.
Yeah, man.
And we can sit down and I can teach you live if you don't mind stumbling in front of a YouTube channel. Through the lesson, I think that there's some value to that because I think that the premise of this YouTube channel that I'll be launching is just the average person, teaching the average person what the information age has to offer, which is data, and being able to leverage what that data can do, right? The information age is oil, so to speak, is data.
Right.
If you know what to do with the oil, you know how to put it in the gas tank of a car and drive, you can go so many places.
I agree. And so it's spelled, is bite, B-Y-T-E? Is that right?
It's B-I-T-E. It's like a bite size.
Okay. No, I don't know because you're a tech guy. So I'm like, it might be.
Yeah,
like
I know. I thought about it back and forth, but you know, I talked to my wife about it and she says that sounds stupid to be BYTE again. You know, that's every nerd's doing that, but try to make it simple, you know?
No, I get it, man. I get it. Yeah. And so YouTube, the YouTube channel is up now?
No, I'm playing with the concept of it right now, and I'm recording a few things, but I would love to maybe work with you.
Yeah, I'll
that.
Get on.
And yeah,
let's I'm see, all about like, stumbling in front of people. You should see me learn Spanish in front of people. It's fantastic, and I love it.
Okay, yeah. Dude learns AI that, or learns data stuff.
Oh,
That's
I'm
let's
with it.
start with that,
I'm with it. And
episode one, right? So
so I will make sure. Is there so I like to give the contributor, and you've been a great contributor, the final thought on all of the things that we have, because we've covered a lot, but the final thought is something that I want the contributor to say, hey, if this is something on your heart, you can share that because it's worth your time, that you followed the train of thought that I wanted, but I want you to have the freedom and liberty to say anything that you may be focused on. So I thank you for being a part of the conversation. It was a great conversation, and I will leave the final thought and final word to you.
all right. Well, again, I appreciate your time. Let's do this again. And if anyone else is interested in learning more about AI, Bug Lu and me, on LinkedIn or on social media, and say, hey, look, I'm interested in checking that out. I want to see Lou stumble through data stuff. Because I think maybe I'm smarter than Lou, right? I'm kidding. So
Oh no, I'm good with it.
I'm just that's so if you think you might be smarter than them, at least, then maybe this will be a fun exercise. And if you want to hop onto my channel, please do reach out to me. I would love to teach someone new about the data economy.
Great. And so you is the best way to contact you if they want to follow up is on LinkedIn. Is that the best way?
Yeah, sure. LinkedIn is good. Tag me on stuff. I will be setting up a YouTube channel, and at that point, I'll probably post it on my LinkedIn.
All right. And so I'll make sure but I'll say it anyways. It's
Yeah.
Collin Paran, and
That's
that'll be
correct.
on
Yeah.
LinkedIn. And but I
That'll
mean,
be
I
on LinkedIn. Yeah, I post stuff there now about data stuff on LinkedIn, some articles. And so, what I'll do is I'll probably be launching my channel through there.
Awesome. Well, I thank you, sir. I'm pretty sure this will not be the last time we talk in this kind of forum, and I look forward to stumbling through some AI stuff. So, thank you again, sir, and yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.